listening to the On the NBA Beat podcast, a show packed with nuanced perspectives on the league's most important stories.
Portland has three timeouts left. The Lakers have two. Bryant to Shaq.
LeBron James with no regard for human life.
Jordan. Oh, a spectacular move by Michael Jordan.
And now, your hosts, Lauren Lee Chen and the twins, Aaron and Joshua Fishman.
Greetings, basketball fans. This is Aaron, excited to bring you our first team-focused interview of the season. And our most prolific guest, Andy Liu, will be joining me shortly to make it all possible. Before we get into some fun Golden State Warriors content with Andy, Lauren and I would like to send our heartfelt thoughts, prayers, and love to former guest and all-around beloved NBA personality, Tass Mellis, his family, and his longtime friends and colleagues at the No Dunks podcast and in the broader basketball community. If you haven't heard, Tass is recovering from being struck by a car outside the Braves stadium, and this couldn't have happened to a nicer, more generous guy. We're with you in your recovery, buddy. Transitioning to today's material, Andy and I recorded on Tuesday of last week, since it's been reported that the Warriors are closing in on a deal to bring an expansion team into the WNBA. They also signed Rudy Gay to a one-year contract, so he'll be competing for a roster spot in camp, which begins Tuesday. A day earlier, Golden State's media day will take place. Also, just ahead of training camp, it's been announced that a Draymond Green ankle sprain will likely sideline the four-time All-Star for 3 to 6 weeks. So, Andy Liu of the Light Years podcast will be with me on today's episode to discuss the biggest storyline swirling around this season's Warriors. This impressively marks his 9th appearance on the NBA beat, which include 8 regular interviews and a more brief visit during Season 3 to help celebrate our 100th episode. If you'd like to follow Andy's terrific work, you can subscribe to the Light Years podcast at patreon.com/lightyears. Okay, let's do it. Let's get into this lively discussion that will explore what Andy expects from the Warriors this season.
Andy, I've been looking forward to this for a while. We had a hiatus from the show, and then we did a non-NBA episode on a cool hockey book, but this is our first team-focused episode, and it's great to have you on. Welcome back to the show.
Always love being on the show. What is this, like the fourth, third, fourth, fifth time? Amazing. It's you guys have known me through the years, man.
I should have been more prepared to answer this question, but it's probably like the 7th or 8th appearance, I would guess. I did look up a few of the past years, and you appeared twice on the first season and 3 times during the second season. So you already were up to 5 through the first 2, if I'm not mistaken. And then sometimes we went a couple years without having you. And I don't think that was necessarily because the Warriors weren't good those 2 years. I think it was just how it worked out.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. You guys have seen me at the highest, the lowest, the highest again, the lowest. So it's like, you know, what are the Warriors now, like in the middle, which is kind of weird. So, you know, it's something new, right? Like I don't get to talk about the Warriors as like this depressed fan because someone's hurt or KD left, or I don't get to talk about the Warriors cuz come off championship. Now it's weird. The Warriors are weird. So, I'm happy to dive into it.
I guess they're weird, but it's not a bad place to be. 6 finals appearances of the last 9 years, 4 championships. So, I mean, I guess expectations, standards, they change over the years, but not a bad weird, I would say, right?
Yeah, that's true.
How are you feeling right now, just about the team going into training camp?
I had a friend, Adam Mares, who covers the Denver Nuggets, come on my podcast yesterday, and he was like, he was telling me how exhausted he was after covering the Nuggets last season, and I'm kind of like, come on, that's one championship.
First world problems too.
Yeah, I was like, come on, relax. Like I've been through the wars. You know, I've been through everything as a Warriors fan this last decade or so. I feel dude, I'm gonna be honest with you. I feel weird going into the season. I generally don't know what to expect. I'm actually relatively pessimistic about the team going into the season, and I think part of it is because I was super optimistic going into last season, and they kind of just fell apart within the first 10 games. So I'm a little pessimistic coming into this one. I'm not sure what to expect. I kind of think that they're not going to be that great, but I can imagine a world that they're real true contenders again. But my overall thought this season is that I don't think it's going to be a disaster. I don't think it's going to be like last season, but I do think that they'll end up kind of in the same place as last season. I think they kind of end up being like a pseudo contender where things just kind of never really worked out. And I think that's where the Warriors are at right now.
That's interesting, and I'll be sure to follow up on that in a second. But just to provide a little more color on what we were discussing about your appearances on the show. So your first appearance on the show was soon after we launched this thing, and it was after the Warriors, these Warriors' first championship. So you were first talking to us toward the beginning of this dynasty. So we've been able to experience a lot of it through your eyes, which has been really cool. So we know what happened last training camp, the punch heard around the world, and that seemed to have far-reaching consequences that maybe still haven't even been completely felt. This training camp hopefully will go just a little bit smoother, but Draymond Green has made the rounds in the media. He also has his own podcast, of course, so he's spoken a lot about this pretty extensively. He kept using the word slippage. He talked about them not being able to win on the road. They were horrendous on the road last year, third worst team. Only the Rockets and Spurs had worse road records. But they also were elite at home. So, I mean, it was just completely uneven season. They fouled a lot in the regular season, which has been the case in past years. But then in the playoffs, they fouled a lot too. Just broadly, what do you think went wrong, and to what extent have they started to address those key issues?
Okay, so I think so many of these issues you mentioned are on the court, right? But I think it really all stemmed from that punch. It really did. They tried to downplay it. They tried to make it seem like they would get through it, but that was the punch that ruined the season. It ruined Draymond Green's standing as a leader. Nobody respected him or wanted to listen to him after that. They're like, dude, you just knock someone out. And things you hear internally about the team behind the scenes was that it's not that Jordan Poole deserved it, because I don't think you can argue anybody deserves to get knocked out like that unless it's like they did something right really bad. But I don't think he deserved it, but he certainly was. It wasn't 100% Draymond Green's fault, right? But anytime something that happens that's like that, you end up not having the same voice you did if you're Draymond Green. And I don't think he's had the same voice for a while now, right? He's just not as good as basketball player anymore. You see the stuff that happened getting suspended in 2016. Then you see him, what happened with Kevin Durant. And now the stuff with Jordan Poole. I think it just makes things very, very difficult for him to be that guy for this team. And I think it works if you're Stephen Clay. It doesn't work if you're Draymond Green and it doesn't work if you're Jordan Poole and Jonathan Kuminga and some of these younger guys who don't necessarily want to hear it from him, right? So I thought that was a big thing. Jordan Poole's regression obviously was. I think he essentially gave up after that punch. Look, he played every game, but he was terrible through most of that regular season. He was terrible in the postseason. He gave up. He didn't want to be here. He didn't try more than half the time, especially on defense. He was atrocious as a passer. Objectively, he was terrible. Now, again, you can kind of argue like, hey, it's Draymond's fault, but he wasn't able to get through it, right? And you know, somebody that's, I've never been knocked out, I'm sure somebody would come in here and say, like, hey, if you got knocked out, you would feel the same. Sure. But regardless, he was terrible all season long from start to finish. So that was another thing. Steph was hurt for a lot of the year. Clay came in out of shape. Andrew Wiggins just vanished for like half the season without an excuse. Like, he never told anyone what happened. They ended up saying that his dad was sick, which, again, we never heard from that again. So it's like, okay, what happened there? Seems like he's going to be fine this season. So it was just a mess from start to finish for the Warriors. And I think you put all that together, they were just never that serious. They gave – oh, I didn't even forget to mention, because this happened so long ago. They gave James Wiseman just 3 minutes to start the first 10 games of the season. Like, he just played 20 minutes a game and they started 3-7. That wasn't all his fault, but he wasn't very good. They traded him and brought back GP2. GP2 was hurt, so he didn't even get to play until the end of the season. So, man, Kuminga. Okay, let's keep going. So Kuminga go in.
You're on a roll. Why not?
And just, he wasn't very good. He didn't take a leap. He essentially just wanted to be like, he wanted to be one of those guys that just averaged 18 points on 42% shooting. Right, just one of those young guys that gets to shoot as much as he wants. Kind of like, think Jalen Green, right? Let me just get shoot as much as I want. Let me just try and figure this thing out. He doesn't have great basketball feel, so he didn't know how to fit into a Warriors offense or defense. And then Moses Moody took a step back. I think we all thought Moses Moody was going to be this great glue guy, but you know, he didn't have the IQ either, and he didn't shoot well enough. He lost a ton of confidence, and I think Steve Kerr didn't do a great job developing these guys or giving them confidence. He went and said, "All right, I'm just going to go rely on Anthony Lamb," who's like a 27-year-old like G League guy who made some glue plays, but the only reason he played was because of how bad Steve Kerr didn't want to trust Kuminga and Moses Moody, right? And then all of a sudden in the postseason, Moses Moody suddenly pops up and plays 25 minutes a game. And it's like, whoa, where was that? So Steve Kerr wasn't great in the regular season either. So you throw all that together, a mess.
Yeah, it sounds like it. But can I just follow up quickly on Jordan Poole? I'm just curious. I'm assuming you heard the thing that Iguodala said on JJ Redick's podcast, just about how Jordan Poole, an improvisational player, he was not given the freedom that guys like Stephen Curry or Draymond Green are given, or Klay Thompson. And he just, from what Iguodala seemed to argue, he just felt confused and frustrated that he wasn't given that level of freedom. What's your take on that?
I don't get where he's coming from. And that's mainly because of how I view basketball. I view basketball a little similarly to kind of Steve Kerr, even though I disagree with a lot of stuff he says, but I view basketball similarly, right? Like, I was a role player. I can't shoot the way he does. I can't create the way he does. So I don't necessarily understand that. I value people who understand how to pass, cut, defend, and play as part of a team. I value that more, but I do understand that shot creation is something that is so invaluable in the game of basketball. Here's the thing that I think Jordan Poole doesn't understand, and I kind of get that he doesn't understand it. Listen, man, your value to the Warriors is that you can replicate 70% of what Steph does. And that, when Steph is hurt, is when you're most valuable, right? Because without Steph, the Warriors don't have any shot creation. They don't have anybody that can dribble the basketball. But when Steph is there, he is and always will be better than you until he's probably 40. So they don't necessarily need you to do a Steph Curry impression when the Warriors have Steph Curry. The most valuable player he can be is a microwave scorer off the bench. Can you be a Jordan Clarkson? Can you be what Tyler Hero was going to be for the Miami Heat before he got hurt? But Jordan Poole doesn't care about that because he's proven that he's proven that he can be a scorer in the NBA. He's won a championship. And I think that he feels that he's better than guys like Klay Thompson. But I would argue you can't shoot as well as Klay. You can't play off the ball as well as Klay. And you can't defend as well as Klay, even though Klay's not a great defender anymore. So Steph and Klay are just a better fit. And when you go with Steph, Poole, and Klay, now you're taking the ball out of Steph's hand in big situations. Why would the Warriors do that in these must-win games? And then on the other side, you're also an atrocious defender. So I think Jordan Poole going to the Washington Wizards is probably the best thing that can happen to him, because he's already done what so many people in the league can't do. He's won a championship. He was a big player on that championship team. Now he gets to go somewhere where you can just shoot 25 times a game. Definitely, and nobody will give a fuck. You know what I mean? It's like, the Wizards are going to win 32 games, and I don't think Jordan Poole will care, because he just, he gets to do now what he wants to do. And I think that was never going to happen with the Warriors as long as Steph was there.
No, that's completely fair. And you're right. He's going to get all the shots that he wants. He's going to make a ton of mistakes, hopefully learn from them. But I think it's going to be fun to watch him in DC. So the team chose to move on from him, and Chris Paul is now here in his place. He'll be something like the third or fourth oldest player in the NBA this year. They're already an aging core, but one of the best ever point guards in the NBA. So it'll be interesting. I guess before we talk more about what you expect the fit to be like with Paul and expectations, what do you think about the starter situation? I know Kerr just said that there'll essentially be six starters, meaning six people who play a lot. But just expound more upon that if you can for me, what you think he means and his approach.
So Steve Kerr's biggest job this season is to figure out the Chris Paul situation and try to have him come off the bench. The Warriors season is dead in the water if they're forced to start Chris Paul. If they can't get Chris Paul to say, one, you got to come off the bench, and two, you're not going to close every game. If they can't get Chris Paul to be okay with those things, the season's done. And that's why I'm pessimistic on the season, is that I just think that's a really difficult thing to tell someone. I think the Russell
Westbrook. Does that have to do with also with how ball dominant Chris Paul is? Is that one of your main concerns?
I don't think so, actually. I think he's smart enough on the court to figure out how to be more ball, how to be less ball dominant. I also think Steph wants him to be more ball dominant. I think Steph has mentioned multiple times in the playoffs last season that they don't have a curveball to throw at anyone. He wants a different type of offense out there instead of just Steph pick and roll, Steph pick and roll, Steph pick and roll. I think he wants something different. So I think he likes the Chris Paul fit. But I think that there are going to be situations on certain nights where Kevon Looney's going to have to close. They need defense. They need bigger guys. The other team has a big guy that they need, and they need him out there. It's going to be certain nights where Steph and Clay and Wiggins has it going. You just don't really need Chris Paul out there, right? Like the last 8 minutes, you may not need him. And I don't know if Chris Paul is going to be up for that. It just really reminds you of Russell Westbrook on the Lakers. I don't think it's going to be that disastrous. I think that fit was like that fit you knew wasn't going to work on the court or off the court. I think you can say the Chris Paul fit can work on the court at times. It's not a perfect fit. I think, again, you're too small, right? Again, you've got Steph, Clay, and Chris Paul who are all at this point in the careers. Is Steph the best defender out of those three? That's not great. Right? That's not great because Chris Paul is an elite defender in his prime. He's certainly not anymore. Klay Thompson, elite defender in his prime. Certainly not anymore. He had trouble guarding Austin Reeves. Let's be serious. And so I think that makes it very difficult. It's kind of running into the same problems that Steph, Jordan Poole, and Klay had. So I think Steve Kerr, to answer your question, I think Steve Kerr's biggest job this season is to find a way to get Chris Paul to buy in on coming off the bench. Because if Steve Kerr can't do that, I don't give a what X's and O's or anything that else you're going to do. This team is cooked.
So if it were up to you, then would you just have the most obvious other five starting? So that would be Curry, Thompson, Wiggins, Green, and Looney?
Yep.
Okay. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, net rating, that's you know, one of the best starting lineups, if not the best starting lineup last season. Most of the time it's going to work. Look, it didn't really work against the Lakers because they have Anthony Davis, right? It's just a very difficult matchup when you've got two guys that can't score on the court. So maybe you play some matchups when that happens, but you're not playing the Lakers every night. You're not playing Anthony Davis every night. So I think against 90% of other teams, that lineup is going to be really successful. And you also don't want to burn, like, end of the day, Chris Paul's not playing 35 minutes a game. Like their goal is to keep him to play in the postseason. Like he should be playing 20 minutes, 20 to 25 minutes a game is probably where he should be at. If he's going to play in the 30s, he's not going to make it to the end of the season. He's almost 40. LeBron James can't even make it to the end of the season. And LeBron James is LeBron James. So they've got to get him to buy in. And if he doesn't, you know, they can trade him. They can trade him at the trade level.
And I feel like they added Corey Joseph as kind of an insurance policy where he may not play that much, but these guys are aging and Paul misses games and whatever. But I do want to cite, and I'm sure you're well aware of this, that Chris Paul has not started one single game in his entire career, including the postseason. That's 1,363 games. But he wants to win. He hasn't won a championship yet. And sacrifice is a thing that Kerr and a lot of the guys are talking about going into the season. I don't know if it's also a slight nod to Poole not really sacrificing as much, maybe, or whatever it is. But so you'd have to think that Paul will want to sacrifice and do what is asked of him. But it'll be interesting to see how he does coming off the bench, if that is the case.
I agree. I don't know how he's going to take it. He's not going to like it. We know that. They have a direct comparison where Andre Iguodala was told to come off the bench. Right. And he did. He hated it. He was not a fan. But the Warriors started that season, that 24-15 championship season. They won 67 games. So what was Andre Iguodala going to say? So I think something similar is going to happen here where I think Steve's going to tell Chris Paul to come off the bench. And Chris Paul's either going to say no and this thing is off and running terribly, or he's going to say yes and they do it. But they're also going to have to play well to start. Because let's say they go 4-6 the first 10 games, right? And he's coming off the bench and maybe he's closing a few games. You know, then maybe he comes to the team and it's like, hey, look, man, put me in the starting lineup. Like, let's go. Right. And then maybe that'll kickstart the team. Maybe that's not a bad scenario. But again, like the Warriors do have to get off with a good start this season. I think this thing is tenuous. I do. I think this thing is tenuous. I don't think it's like a lot of the Warriors seasons this last decade has been tenuous, including the KD years. But I do think this one particularly, the first 10 games is going to tell us a lot about where the Warriors are going to be the rest of the season.
I hinted at this a little bit earlier, just saying that Paul is known as a ball dominant point guard. And you said you weren't really that concerned about this, but I guess I'm just curious when he is sharing court time with Chris, with Curry, if we do see a lot of pick and roll action and stuff like that, where Paul is dribbling the ball and making things happen, to what extent are you worried that that may strip us of seeing some of the Steph magic where he just dribbles around and does crazy things?
I am worried about that. I think there will be games at the end of the game where Chris Paul is going to be doing the pound, 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 pound. Let me run a high pick and roll with someone and then do the little mid-range fadeaway pull-up, right? Or mid-range pull-up, right? Like, that's his kind of specialty.
Seen plenty of those watching the Clippers over the Clippers, years.
Right? This is in his prime. I mean, he was nailing those. Like, that thing was money. I think Steph likes that. I think he wants that. I think Steph would prefer... Look, I think Chris Paul is smart enough not to say like, hey, I'm gonna shoulder the entire offensive burden, right? I think the fit is a little bit cleaner it is on the court than it is off the court, because he's a great passer. He's gonna get guys like Kuminga involved because Kuminga is just not a good ball handler or playmaker. Like, get him in there as a play finisher. Dario Saric is another guy that Chris has played for a long time with that he's gonna have great chemistry with, and so. I do think that this team, if they're bought in, I think the fit on the court is a little bit better than what you're saying. Like, I think Steph has played so much off ball in his career that he actually likes it. I know a lot of people, including myself, are always, this is why I don't blame Steve Kerr as much anymore. Cause I'm like, you guys do know that when Steph doesn't shoot the ball the first 6 minutes of the game, it's his fault. He's the one that doesn't want to shoot the ball. He's the one that wants to play off ball. He's the one that wants to ease in the game. He wants to see what they can get. He doesn't want to come into a game and say, I need to take over. Very rarely does he do that. He did that in game 7 against Sac because he had no other choice. He said, okay, I'm going to have to run Steph ISO pick and roll for 48 minutes and score 50 points or else we're going to lose this game, right? I have to control the game. But more often than not, you can't do that. He's 6'3". He's not LeBron. He's not that size. He has to be able to play off the ball to keep his body preserved the right way, right? And also, he's the greatest off-ball player of all time. He's also the greatest on-ball offensive player of all time that I've ever seen. So, as a guard. And so, I mean, we've got Jokic now, who's a great on-ball offensive player now, right? So, I think that's part of the game that maybe last season they weren't good enough getting Steph the ball off-ball because Jordan Poole wasn't passing. Kuminga didn't know how to play. Wiseman didn't know how to play. Jermichael Green didn't know how to play Warrior-style basketball. It's hard. And I think Chris Paul is one of those people that's smart enough in the NBA to just pick it up off the bat. Easy.
Yeah, I think so too. And talking about a guy who you do expect to start or at least want to start, Kevon Looney, he's one of my favorite underrated players in the league. He's just so valuable to what the Warriors do. And his per 36 rebounding has just shot just off the charts. It's crazy. He's now per 36 at 14 rebounds. And 5 of them offensive per 36 minutes. He ratcheted that up to a whole nother level in the postseason. Those second shot opportunities when you have guys like Steph and Clay I mean, I just think they're so invaluable. The one thing that people are a little concerned about around this team is the floor spacing when you have Kevon Looney and Draymond Green on the court at the same time, but you also have Steph and Clay and maybe I don't know, Wiggins or Paul. So yeah, there's a lot there.
Yeah, I think like when you think of the elite teams around the league, the contending teams, they usually have two top 10 guys. Right. You go down the list, start with the Nuggets and you've got Nikola Jokic as number one. And I would say Jamal Murray, he's not a top 10 player, but in the postseason, he plays like a top 10 guy. Right. He's just that good in the conversation, maybe top 20 guy at the very least. Right. So I think you throw him up there, especially in his prime. He's only getting better. The Lakers, you got LeBron, you got AD. Right. Then you go to the East and you've got Giannis, right, that won a championship, and you can, actually, let's take out Milwaukee. So you go to Miami, you've got Jimmy Butler and Bam. So those are two top 20 guys. Then you go to Boston, you've got Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, right? And you kind of go to Phoenix, and you've got KD and Book. And you go to the Warriors, and I actually think it's similar to Milwaukee. You've got one guy. You've got a top five guy on your team, Steph, right? But after that, Klay, Wiggins, Draymond, maybe throw Looney in there. Because Klay and Draymond just isn't in their prime anymore, none of those guys are in the top 20. You can even argue maybe none of those guys are in the top 30 in the NBA. But what the Warriors have is they got a bunch of those guys that are really good that are maybe in the top 50 to 70. So they've got depth, right? Like kind of like Chris Middleton, Brook Lopez, Drew Holiday, right? None of those guys are top 20, but you throw all those guys together, that's a pretty good team. Same with the Warriors, right? None of those guys are top 20 or top 30, but you throw Klay, Draymond, Looney, and Chris Paul in there, Wiggins, like those are all really, really good players that just aren't superstars. And so I think like that's probably where the Warriors have an advantage over a lot of people. But again, you can argue that because those guys are so old and injury prone, like... You know, there's going to be, all those guys are probably going to miss 20 games this season, right? Including Steph.
Yeah.
They have the ability to get another top guy, but there's nobody there for them right now to get, right?
You referenced Andrew Wiggins' weird season a little bit earlier, and we're glad everything seems to be okay with his dad, even though no updates or anything, any information around that. But I thought it was impressive how he missed time, then came back. Did well after a brief adjustment period, then was again absent for months and came back just for the start of the playoffs and played pretty well. I know you've been a little bit skeptical of him in the past. Has he made you a believer or not yet?
He has. I've been wrong. I am wrong. I was wrong. Very wrong. That. About Andrew Wiggins. He's one of the best two-way guys in the NBA. I think he's still underrated. I think he's an elite on-ball wing defender. He can guard pretty much anybody when he's healthy. He's a very, very good shooter. And I think the thing that people don't talk about is he doesn't want more, right? He doesn't want to be the number one guy. He's done that before. He failed at it. He knows that he shouldn't be initiating offense. He's a play finisher. He's much better as a play finisher. He's a great dunker. He's a decent drive guy. Probably doesn't drive enough still, but fine. He's a very, very good three-point shooter, and he has a very nice fadeaway mid-range jump shot. He's someone that I think, look, he's not going to be the number two, but he's such a good player as the number three. Like, it's very reminiscent to what Aaron Gordon did in the NBA Finals, where like if you're going to leave him open, he's going to make you pay, and he's going to be so good defensively. He does all the glue stuff. Like, shout out to the Warriors. You know, one, for trading for him, taking the risk, and then two, identifying that he's going to be able to do all those things. And of course, Andrew Wiggins has to be the one that wants to do those things, right? I think of Kuminga as someone, and again, different tiers of where they're going to, different phases of their career that where they're going to be. But like, Jonathan Kuminga could be Andrew Wiggins pretty easily. Like, he could be a better version of Andrew Wiggins just based off of athletic profile. He can shoot a little bit, super, super athletic, can be an elite defender. The difference, though, is that Andrew Wiggins went through the first 7 years of his career being a failed first option. Jonathan Kuminga will be a failed first option. I think that's pretty clear. He doesn't have the handle. He doesn't have the IQ. He's never going to be a first option. He doesn't know that yet. And that's the difference, right? It's Wiggins knows that. Kuminga doesn't know that. I assure you, I know this. He goes and tells his family, Steve Kerr is benching me. He's ruining. And look, he might be right. Right? Because he should be playing more. I would argue he should be playing more. But because the Warriors want him to play a style that I just think guys don't want to play that style unless they failed already. Aaron Gordon plays the way he does because he was at the Orlando Magic losing games every single season, and he was not good enough to get him to get that team to be good. And so he said, okay, like I'm going to go and be a role player, and I'm going to be an elite role player. And now he has a championship, right? I think the same thing's going to go for someone like Brandon Ingram, who's just, I think, is pretty overrated, probably better off as a role player. But I don't know. He probably doesn't know that yet, right? Like he doesn't know that yet. And it just, and I think that's what makes Andrew Wiggins so great. Just a perfect fit. You just need guys in their mid to late 20s. Shocker. Guys in their prime are better for you when you want to win championships, right? Real freaking shocker. But that's what Andrew Wiggins wants. They got him in his mid 20s, and now he's going to be on the team for another 4 years for a really cap friendly contract. And he's going to be someone that's going to be so integral to them next season. He has to be able to play 70 games. He just has. There's no reason for him not to. He's not an injury bone player. Like he's gonna have to play those games. And you know, all signs point to him being healthy. Frankly, we haven't heard anything about him off season, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah, I think so. And I'm glad you've seen the light on him now. I also think that was just a fascinating parallel that you just gave on Wiggins and Kuminga. Both lottery picks, Kuminga 7th overall, Wiggins, of course, 1st overall pick. But speaking of Kuminga, I put him and Moody in a similar category. I know Moody is a different position, but they're going to be starting their third seasons in the NBA soon. Kuminga and Moody, as you mentioned earlier, have disappointed a little bit and or want more minutes. But I don't know, do you expect any of those to actually get more minutes and make the most of it?
The guy that I expect that I think I know is going to be good is Moses Moody. He was the guy that Steve Kerr relied on in the postseason when they needed minutes. Again, hilariously bad development because he never played in the whole season. Steve Kerr came up with a he was talking about how, oh, he was getting great reps in practice. You don't see that. It's like, no, there's no better reps in basketball than to just play. You weren't playing people that were better than him. Anthony Lamb was not good when you played him. Cut the cap, right? So I think he'll be good. He's a good shooter. He found good rhythm as a shooter. He became a better off-ball defender. He still dribbles a lot. And he's not athletic or quick enough to be able to dribble and score, but he does try that a lot, and it often leads to turnovers. So maybe he'll pick his spots a little better, third-year leap type of guy. He generally does have really, really good IQ, both cutting as well as defending. So I think he's going to take a step, but he's not going to be a superstar, right? So you kind of want him to take a step and be like a really, really super good role player. You look at what the Lakers did with Austin Reeves. Different type of player, but you look at what the Lakers did with Austin Reeves. Like, smart player, can shoot it. Dribble a little, defend a little. Like, that's a guy who took a leap, and now he's just a really, really good player, really good winning player for the Lakers. That's key, winning player. And I think that's what Moses Moody is. Kuminga, jury's still out. I don't want to be the guy that on him. I mean, he's like 22 years old, and he's trying to make it in the league, and he's got a crap ton of talent. I don't know what his mindset is. Does he want to rebound? Does he want to defend? Does he want to cut? Does he want to not dribble as much? Like, I just don't know if that's what he wants to do. I don't know if it's fair to pigeonhole him into that because he feels like he has more potential, and maybe he does. I think this season does come down to if those two guys can take a leap. I think it does.
It's frustrating because the potential is so tantalizing. With both of those guys, I've watched Kuminga more than Moody, but you just really see it. I mean, I agree with you that I don't think Kuminga will be a superstar on a playoff team. I'm pretty sure that he won't be. But it would be a shame, I think, if the Warriors end up moving on from him. But we've heard a lot of rumors about Kuminga possibly being dealt. It's also same for Moody. I guess it remains to be seen. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more show.
Hi, I'm Molly Morrison, and I am on the NBA beat. Hey, this is Shamit Dua from In the Know, a New Orleans Pelicans podcast, and you're listening to On the NBA Beat.
Just on the team building standpoint, it's interesting because there is talk of these two timelines where you're doing them at the same time, where you're bringing along these young guys and you're keeping the aging core that brought you so much success together, and you have that two timeline approach. Now, maybe they've moved away from it either a little bit or a lot by shipping out Poole, bringing in Chris Paul. But it's an interesting time here with the Warriors. Now, Bob Myers has left, president and general manager, stepping down. He was only 48, two-time executive of the year. So much success. The architect of this team that won four championships. How do you think the front office is approaching this? And how much confidence do you have in GM Mike Dunleavy Jr., Kirk Lakob, and everyone else?
I have no idea. I'm being honest with you. I have no idea. If I knew if it was right or wrong, they should hire me and give me that salary. I could use it. Here's what I'll say about Bob Myers and why he left. I think he just got sick of Joe Lakob. I think that was it ended up just not being the right fit for them any longer. I think Joe Lakob is someone that always wants more. He has expectations, but I think they were starting to, I think Bob Myers was burnt out. He didn't want to deal. Everybody's had a micromanager. Everybody's had a kind of a maniac manager, right? And this is not to say that Joe Lakob's a bad person or even a bad owner. I think he's actually been the best owner in the Bay Area probably since, I don't know. The Yorks, but when the Niners were in their heyday, right? So he's objectively been the best manager, but I do think he was burnt out. He was dealing, I think, pressure from both Steve Kerr under him, right? Kind of just like, here's the players that they want. Here, there's the drama that they had to deal with Draymond, and he had to deal with the pressure from Joe Lakob, which was very much like a, let's try to do two timelines. Let's try to do this. Let's try to do that. And I think Bob Myers was just like, hey, I've had enough. Like, I don't need this, right? They offered him a ton of money. An absurd amount of money. And he just said, no, I think I'm good. I think I'm going to go work at ESPN and relax and do that, right? I think moving forward with Mike Dunleavy and Kirk Lakob, they're not losing, I think, the X's and O's or the like the strategic path of where they want to go with Bob Myers. I think they're smart enough to do what Bob Myers had done the last decade. What I do think that they're losing is the relationships, the kind of mending of relationships that Bob Myers could do. How Bob Myers can calm Draymond down, right? And build a bridge between Draymond Green and Steve Kerr. Build a bridge between Steph Curry and the young guys, right? And kind of get people bought in. Get Joe Lakob bought in. Let me give an example. The Klay Thompson contract extension is coming up, right? I'm sure at some point Klay Thompson is going to be pissed that the Warriors are offering him 4 years and $80 million. I'm sure he will. And Clay's going to go and say, I'm going to go and I'm going to get an offer from the Lakers and I'm going to go to LA, right? That's where Bob Myers is the most successful. And Bob Myers can go to Clay and say, hey, look, listen, this is just Joe being Joe, right? And go and tell us your offer. We'll work with you. We'll get you back in here, right? Like it's not as simple as that. But like that's what Bob was great at. And I think that stuff is not, you can't quantify that stuff. And I think that's what the Warriors would be missing from an on-court like talent evaluation perspective. I think all that stuff was, you know, Dunleavy was doing a lot of that stuff already. I don't think they'll miss that much. Now, one thing I do think that may happen is that if this Chris Paul thing doesn't work, Bob Myers has never really shown an inclination to make big moves at the trade deadline. I think that changes with Dunleavy and Kirk. I think those guys are willing to say, hey, if this doesn't work, let's go. Let's move. Let's try something different. Right? Let's get it done right now. I think Bob was always a little more conservative. And I don't know. You know, when you're a new manager, you kind of want to make that first splash move. And I think Dunleavy has kind of done it with the Jordan Poole, who was his guy. He kind of was there, like, pushing to draft Jordan Poole. Like his kind of move right now is to say like, hey, I've traded that to get Chris Paul. Like that's his move. But, you know, if it doesn't work, I think there's a shot that he just moves Chris at the trade deadline and says like, hey, this is what we're going to do. So, yeah.
Yeah, the team is also, from a front office perspective, at a critical juncture with Bob Myers leaving, just given the historic luxury tax bill that's going to be coming due soon, and also just with the changing CBA that discourages big spending teams from doing what they do. They did re-sign Draymond Green. He was given a 4-year, $100 million extension after he opted out of the final year. But Klay Thompson is the still lingering contract situation. So he has just this year under contract. And from my perspective, I would be surprised if the team and Klay don't find a way to partner up again. It seems like it's more just a matter of hammering out the length and the amount on that deal. How do you think that situation unfolds? And are they just going to take their time on this, make sure they get it right?
I think so. I think that deal is going to happen. I think part of the reason why they traded Poole outside of the Poole and Draymond issues was that they wanted to clear up some money to re-sign Klay. I think Klay's still good enough. I think the question to me isn't whether they'll re-sign him. I think that deal gets done. It's for how much, I think they'll make it work. I think Draymond has made it clear that he'll make it work. And Wiggins took less money to make it work. I think it would be a little shocking to me and maybe even out of character for Klay to say, yeah, I'm just going to go and get $15 million more total and just go somewhere else, right? I think he could. I think someone would give him more money somewhere else. I think like Orlando or, I don't know, OKC or the Spurs or someone maybe throw like $20 million over the entirety of a contract more at him. I don't know, $10, $20 million. And I think Klay will probably most likely take a little bit less to come back to the Warriors. If they can stay under the second tax line, the tax apron, they can use that money to get a mid-level exception player, right? If he signs for a little bit less. So maybe there's some positives there. I think the question is more around how good is Klay going to be for the entirety of that contract? And that goes for Draymond too. How good are these guys good enough to win a championship as the second and third best players? And I don't know the answer, because Klay had a weird season. He led the league in three-pointers, but you can't tell me he had a great season, right? He started off the first half of the season pretty out of shape because he wasn't playing in the offseason. He had some mental hurdles to get through. And he was great in the middle of the season. Then he burnt out. At the end of the year, he got gassed, and he wasn't great down the stretch. But he carried the Warriors for long stretches in the middle of the season, right? So it'll be interesting to see just how good he is now moving forward. I think he'll still be good. Just because of the way he plays. He's a 6'9 freaking jump shooter. I mean, just how can he not be good? But how good is he going to be? Can they win a championship? I don't know.
So if you answer that last question that you asked with a no, that he's not good enough over the length of that contract to help a team win a championship, do you try to curtail the number of years, or do you just give him what he wants because of a career achievement thing, what he helped make happen with Golden State, and just do it so he resigns?
They are not going to give him a career achievement contract because they already did.
Maybe do like 2 or 3 years if they don't want to sign him for too long.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think so. I don't know. Actually, I don't know, because Draymond got the 3+1. He got the plus player option, which is pretty much 4 years. And with Klay, I think it's going to be something similar, right? It'll just be a 3. I think 2 is a little short. I think he's just older. He doesn't, like, what is he going to do? He's going to want to get back on the market when he's 35. Like, it doesn't really make that much sense. I think it'll probably be something similar, like a 3+1, fourth year as a player option, right? These guys are going to end their careers together as Golden State Warriors. But yeah, I don't think they're going to give him the career achievement award because they gave it to him already. I mean, he earned it, but he tore his Achilles and then tore his ACL, and he got paid almost $80 million or something across 2 years, and he didn't play any basketball. The ACL wasn't his fault, right? So it's like you can't look at it that way, but I'm sure the Warriors are going to say to him, again, this is all negotiations and business, they're going to say to him, like, look, man, like, you didn't play for 2 years. Like, those are $80 million that they signed into that extension after he got hurt. Right, so it was very much like a, hey, like, this is what you've done for us, and I agree at the time with the extension, and I still do. It's just I don't think he's getting a he's certainly not getting a if anyone's getting that, it's Steph.
Just the closing question for you, just wanted to make sure I'm understanding you correctly. So you don't exactly see these Warriors as a contender, but maybe they're like an outside contender where the highest ceiling is a championship, but You wouldn't bet on it. So you kind of see them as like a tier below contender at this point.
But like, what are the tiers, right? I agree with you. But you agree with me, so I agree with myself. But like, to me, it feels like the number one team is the Nuggets, right? I think pretty clearly the Nuggets are the best team in the NBA. They ran through the Western Conference and they beat the out of the Miami Heat. Like, you can't take any of that away. They were not playing in a bubble, right? So like, all of that is real. Outside of that team, though, it's pretty, you can argue with the flaws with every other team outside of that. So I still think they're a pseudo contender, but I do think the NBA has pretty decent parity, at least at the top eight teams.
Yeah, like in the West, 4 through 10 was extremely close. And I realize you probably don't expect the Warriors to be 44-38 this coming season, but with their 44-38 record, I think they were only, I'm not looking at it, but like 6 games ahead of the 10th place team, or maybe it was probably even less than that. But anyway, the point is there are a lot of capable teams with young players, and so not a lot that are proven necessarily, but it just kind of seems like it's all jumbled. And so maybe that gives the Warriors a leg up on a lot of them, but you still wouldn't say they're contender yet.
I would say, I mean, you put it that way, I should probably put them in the contender bucket. Like, you put it that way, you actually think about the tiers, like, the Warriors are in the same tier as the Lakers, as the Suns. So if the Nuggets are obviously a true contender, and I say a lot, there are a lot of questionable ones after that, the questionable ones are probably the Lakers. You got questions there with age and injuries and how much shooting do they have. Then you've got the Phoenix Suns who...
get out of here.
I don't even know if you throw the Clippers in there, that's okay. Right? Lakers, Suns, right? The Clippers, it's like, dude, how many years are we going to do this? The Suns are like the new age Clippers, right? They're going to run this back. It's not going to work. But I'll throw them in there, right? They've got a ton of talent. Then you throw the Warriors in there. So those are your three contenders in the West outside of Denver. And then you've got, like you said, like the Clippers to the Thunder, to the Grizz, to the Pelicans even. Like, they're all about the same level, right? And then you go in the East, and I would say, wouldn't you just put the Sixers, the Bucks, and the Heat all in the same bucket as the Lakers, the Warriors, the Suns? Aren't they kind of all the same, where there's so many question marks about these teams that now that you say it like that, I actually take back my pseudo-contender remark because all of these guys are pseudo-contenders, right? Like, there's just a ton of question marks for all of these guys, and I would hesitate to put the Warriors a tier below the Lakers, or a tier below the Suns, or a tier below the Miami Heat. Like, it just doesn't make sense to me.
That's fair.
Everybody has the same questions.
And I think what you just said about all these pseudo contenders and parity makes the league so exciting right now. It's wide open, so many really good teams. And then also, you didn't mention the Celtics, but maybe just because you weren't saying
they're
a pseudo contender, but yeah, they're a contender. Yeah, so... yeah, this is always a pleasure having you on, whether it's just me, just Lauren, both of us. It's always a pleasure. It's a journey. I got to be ready with the censor button with you, which always makes it fun. It's lively. I like it.
Nah, that's, you should have warned me beforehand, but you know.
No, I like it. It's fun. I get to press the button.
No, this is great, man. I think, you know, kind of to cap this off, I think the Warriors are one of the most interesting teams this season, and I don't think that the Warriors have been one of the most interesting teams in a while. I just think the Warriors have been pretty, like, they're entertaining, they're fun, Steph is awesome, they're a contender. That's it. Like, there's no true intrigue there. But this season, you know, Chris Paul, you got the young guys, maybe Steve Kerr's coming in as a lame duck coach. I don't know. He hasn't got an extension yet. This might be his last season as a coach. Like because of that, I think it's intriguing, and yeah, man, I'm ready for it. I appreciate you guys. You guys always do great work, man.
Thank you. They're keeping you on your toes, and they're keeping all of us on our toes. I'm going to be excited to watch them this season. Enjoy the year. Thanks, Andy.
All right, man.